Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Actually, I was watching The Sopranos last night. Livia Soprano is in the assisted living, and she was eating Jell-O.
She's one that was Nancy Marchand. She passed away, but that was a really famous actress. She did very, very well on that show.
She's great. She died
in the middle of the run.
Oh, did she?
The actress passed away, but she was pretty spectacular.
Yeah, no, it's great. One episode of Sopranos every night is helping me to get through the quarantine. Hey, it is a just take a minute walk out onto your front porch. I sound like Howard Beale here. And look at what a beautiful day it is.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful day.
I was on a walk today, and I thought to myself, man, this be a great golf day. And I haven't picked up a golf club in a month.
It is a great day for a walk. Aren't you chipping around your backyard a little bit?
Yeah.
Don't you have a little putting green in your backyard?
Yeah, I wish. My buddy Kelly does, who lives around the corner from me, but I haven't gone up there yet.
Yeah.
Other generations have made much more significant sacrifices than we have.
Yes.
We can stay at home and stay off the golf course for a month. That's not that
yes,
big
we
of a
can.
Deal.
Yes, we can. And you know what? I think there are increasing, and I just want to put the most positive spin in the world on this today. Because I was watching Cuomo, not the talk show host, but the older brother, the governor, and he was talking about the curve flattening. And I was watching Gavin Newsom, and he was talking about the curve flattening. So maybe all of this shelter-at-home stuff is starting to pay off, and maybe we are making progress right now towards getting back to something like normal life. I don't think it's going to be normal for a long time, but at least to be able to go outside, to be able to socialize a little bit with other people who are healthy, and to be able to get rid of this physical distance we've got from between each other. There's a lot of talk now. I was watching somebody from the mayor's office talking about, restaurants at some point are going to be able to reopen. They're just going to have to increase the space between tables and eliminate some of the capacity. And that's a reasonable thing. You'll still get to go to your favorite restaurant. The tables won't be on top of each other. There'll be distance between the tables. You can start to see how this is kind of going to work. The people I feel the most for, and the governor was talking about this, is people who are 65 plus. They probably are going to need to continue to be incredibly careful and not mix because they are in the highest risk group. So that crowd is probably going to have to spend more time at home than the rest of us will. But I'm starting to see light at the end. I think it's time to get enthusiastic, to get optimistic, to put some positivity out into the world. John, I think we're getting through this thing.
Well, eventually we are. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah.
It's coming.
So,
yeah, I mean, and we're going to have sports in some way, shape, or form. Probably not with fans, but we're going to have sports.
Yeah, I think it's 100% likely that it won't be with fans, given what's going on in the world right now and the situation we're in. Chris Fowler was on the IG. Do you call it the IG or the Gram or the Insta, John? Which one do you call it?
None of the above. I'm not on it.
Okay, so obviously Chris Fowler he did an IG Q&A, and he has three scenarios on how college football might come back this season. Here is scenario number one.
It's just speculation, but I've had conversations with people who are in the planning stages. They're not the decision makers, but they're planning the various scenarios and the what ifs, and they're thinking about a few different scenarios. The first scenario is the season begins on time and isn't altered much. Time is running out, though, unless you feel like 4 to 6 weeks is a whole lot of time, because I'm told that by the end of May, there has to be clarity. And if you're going to have college campuses open, which you have to have if you're going to bring the players back, That's about the deadline to get things going on time. And there are various conference commissioners in the Power Five Conference, athletic directors on the phone constantly. They have to plan for the what if of a season on time. If it gets pushed back by the deciders, and college football is way more complicated than any pro sport. The NFL is getting heavy political pressure to begin on time. And the networks want to see that too. But college football, if you think about it, so many different layers, municipalities and states will decide when to open the valve and let people get back together again.
So that's scenario one. Start on time and try to go exactly the way they were. I think the time is going to run out on that. Personally, I can't imagine how that's going to happen for the season to go on exactly as planned. Here is scenario two from Chris Fowler.
Scenario two, the season starts late and maybe gets shortened a bit. So maybe you get going in November and you go through January in some way. You have to reshuffle the playoff. To me, that sounds problematic. People are very worried about a second wave of this virus coming back when the temperatures up north turn cold in November. You want to start a season then have to shut it down? To me, that would be disastrous.
So that scenario, too, is you just start later and, you know, you wait until October to get started, or you wait till late September to get started. That seems like a more reasonable plan. Here is scenario number three, again, from Chris Fowler.
There's a third scenario that's gaining momentum and that on the surface might sound preposterous, but I think a lot of reasonable people feel like it might be the most prudent course of action, and that's football in the spring. Beginning at some point in February into March, April, May, maybe you have the postseason in June. That would have to be reshuffled a bit. It would be bizarre. It would wreak havoc on some other sports in that time of year. But to avoid the financial disaster of having no football season in the academic year, I think it might be a fallback position. And I think that testing will come a long way by then, and perhaps closer to a vaccine, perhaps it'll make more sense for people to gather in large numbers in stadiums in about 8 months, right, instead of three or four.
And that one sounds like it's got real potential. Now, it is going to be weird for there to be college football in February, but if you've got 8 months to get ready for it, and potentially, maybe it's not a vaccine, maybe it's just really a really good treatment that gets developed, then all of a sudden you've got a chance to have college football, even if it's pushed forward on the calendar.
Okay, several things to unpack here. Number one, he said something in the beginning. He said, you can't have college football without the kids back on campus. I don't know if that's true. I went to UCLA, and we were a notorious late-starting school.
Right,
sometimes
right.
We didn't start until October 1st. So we played games in August and September every year when nobody was on campus.
Yeah, but you can't really bring back college football if kids aren't back in school. That doesn't make any sense. It is, they're still, I mean, I'll put it in air quotes, student-athletes. There's at least the idea that they're going to class.
But yeah, because how are you going to say, like, it's safe enough for you to play football, but not for you to take classes?
Well, it's a gathering issue. In other words, you can't put 40,000 people on the UCLA campus in September and just say go. But you can put 100 kids on campus to play football.
But then they're not going to go to class at all.
They're going to go to online class. They're going to do what my son's doing now. He's taking all his classes online.
Are colleges doing that right now, too?
Sure. They're all doing it.
So you're going to UCLA online right now, or people are?
Yeah, people that are enrolled at UCLA are, yeah.
Well, I mean, then that does make sense.
So I would disagree with Chris's first premise that you can't have football if the campuses aren't reopened. I think that it's a matter of what the gathering rules will be. Now, football of all the sports, though, Steve, is I'm trying to grab you, tackle you. I'm sweating on top of you. You know, there's direct contact and there's body to body contact. And we would need medical doctor approval in order to play. But let's say we get that.
Yeah.
I think that you don't necessarily have to have, that was my first point, you don't have to have the campuses open. Kids can take classes online and they can each represent their schools. Now, the second one was start later, start in November. And his worry was, what are you going to do if somebody tests positive and you got to shut it all down again? Well, that's going to be a problem no matter when you start. This virus.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Okay, so here's the problem with that, John. So after somebody tests positive, it means you have to do a tracing back of everybody that came in contact with them. And everybody on a football team will have come in contact with them. Everybody will be quarantined. The entire team will be quarantined.
Right, but it depends, doesn't it, whether or not, like, some of the kids are already going to have the antibody. I mean, I'm assuming testing is going to be much better in September than it is now in April, right?
You would think so, but as soon as somebody tests positive and they come in contact with other people, in other words, they're the Rudy Gobert of their team, then doesn't the team have to go into quarantine?
Depends. Are there people on the team that have already had it and have the antibody? Those guys don't have to go into quarantine.
Now, but you know, on top of that, they're doing a study in South Korea. Apparently, there are people that are getting it for a second time, which is just a friggin' nightmare.
Well, they said a lot
you
of
get
that.
It, then only, you get it a second time.
They said that that seemed to only have. It was a very, very small study, and they said they attributed that more to faulty testing.
Okay, that's good.
Inaccurate testing.
That's good, because that would be a nightmare if all of a sudden you could get this a second time. Yeah, I don't know what you do, because they're talking about testing and tracing. So in other words, you have a positive test, then they go back and trace everybody who you've been in contact with and quarantine all the people that you've been in contact with. In a team sport, on a football team, well, there's 85 guys that you've come in contact with, along with support personnel. Do they have to quarantine a whole team?
I don't know. We'd have to ask somebody that would know better than us. But
I feel like we need to ask, like, Dr. Fauci, like, what we could do as far as when it, how it relates to sports.
Well, why don't you get us Dr. Fauci?
I'm trying. I'm working on it.
And then the other thing about playing in spring, again, who cares?
I'm with you.
Like, if we can get it, let's get it. It's the same thing I feel about the NBA. Like, people saying, well, there's no way we can play without fans. Yeah, there is. I mean, they're talking about doing it right now. I just want an end to the season, and I'll adjust with whatever scheme they come up with.
Yeah, and by the way, I think, as you said at the beginning, I think no matter what, we are not going to look at large gatherings of people going to games. I don't think we're going to see great big crowds at a college football game. I don't think we're going to see the Coliseum filled for USC or the Rose Bowl filled for UCLA. I don't think we're going to see SoFi Stadium filled for the Rams or the new Raiders Stadium filled for the Raiders. I just don't think we're going to see those things, because those large gatherings, I think, are going to be at issue. When you're talking about younger guys who are athletes, who in some cases will have already tested positive or already had it, and in other cases will be able to be tested and will know that they don't have it, I think there you're talking about a possibility. But the idea that that we're going to see big crowds for games, I just think is out of the realm of possibility.
Probably. But we, you know, everything's going to change as soon as we get testing, as soon as we get a vaccine, as soon, you know, if you have a vaccine, let's say somebody comes up with a vaccine next week, you know, it's going to take 6 months for everybody to get it, but that could start college football on time. That could start the NFL on time if everybody's able to get the vaccine.
I know, but all of them are saying 12 to 18 months on a vaccine.
Maybe.
I mean, polio, it took 5 years.
Yeah, maybe. It depends. How good is the vaccine, and how hard is it to make, and how fast can you
see,
make
I think
it?
Our best chance is a treatment. Our best chance is a treatment's much easier than a vaccine. You know, a medicine that you can take that will mitigate the circumstances and get you through the disease. A treatment, a medicine, whether it be some sort of, you know, like when you get a flu, you take an antibiotic or, you know, whatever those things are. If there are pills that you can take, that is a medication that can help you get through this and help to keep the symptoms from being too severe. It seems like that would be the best short-term scenario for us to be able to get into big groups and to gather. But so far, we don't have a treatment and we don't have a vaccine, at least as of yet.
Right, but I think both are coming at some point. It's just a matter of when they get here. I mean, they made it through, like you said, it took a long time, but they made it through polio. I mean, everybody thought polio was going to be around forever, and they came up with a polio vaccine, and that was it. Game over. It just depends on the difference with this is, Steve, everybody's looking in every corner of the globe. You know, somebody's smart enough to come up with something that'll defeat this. It's just a matter of when. And in the meantime, we all have to be patient, which nobody likes to do. And the economic drivers are that can you imagine if you shut down an entire college football season, that will end college sports on a lot of campuses. Because, like, especially in those SEC schools, the football team pays for all the other sports. So, I mean, if you shut down college football completely, especially if you shut down the TV deals. And that's why, you know, people say, well, why would you play with no fans? You couldn't get a gate. You play because you could honor the TV deal.
Yeah.
And that would be the money that you could use to pay for all the other sports. So I'm not giving up on anything yet.
No, I'm not giving up on anything. I'm giving up on large crowds. I don't think we're going to see large crowds. By the way, this came from Fauci. They've discovered the first evidence of significant mutation of the coronavirus, meaning that strides toward a vaccine could be completely futile. I think the best case scenario is, for a while, we're going to have to learn to live with this thing. That's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to live with it as opposed to cure it. So treat it, improve the treatments. Everybody says, Fauci said yesterday, they're going to be flare-ups of it. There are going to be flare-ups, and all of a sudden we'll see a cluster of cases in one spot. Maybe it takes a little bit longer for a vaccine if this thing is mutating. But I think that the key is we're going to have to learn to live with it. And I think that's what the experts are trying to figure out how we can do now. In every aspect of our life, in every business that is out there, that is unfortunately struggling, is how do we live with it? How do we coexist with it until there's a treatment or there's a cure? Hey, by the way, somebody DM'd me yesterday, and you know, we talked about healthcare workers, doctors, nurses, people who work in grocery stores, guys who are delivering for Amazon or Instacart or Postmates or Grubhub or any of those food services. They wanted me to point out that also guys who work on cars, guys in the automotive business, whose job it is to fix cars, they are also out there working, and that is considered essential work. Anybody who's doing essential work, they are making it possible for everybody else to shelter at home. And so we thank everybody for all that they're doing out there. My cousin back in Pennsylvania is working in a grocery store, and he says it's eerie. He says it's scary when you see somebody walk in and the social distancing and all the masks. So you feel for everybody that's out there in it and working on it.
Well, and I don't think that the medical people get enough love. I mean, think about it. They're going into work every day, the first responders, the guys on the front lines, and they're treating all these COVID-19 patients and putting themselves at risk. And we'll never be able to thank those guys, the doctors and the nurses. There's a special place in heaven for those people, I'll tell you.
So yesterday, Michael Wilbon went on a rant that I completely disagree with, and there is a very funny video making the rounds. It is an NBA 2K matchup between Joe Exotic and Carole Baskin.
Excellent.
And we will play that for you coming up next. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, 710 ESPN, Mason in Ireland. What is going on? It is an optimistic Tuesday. Trying to keep you in a good mood, trying to keep you up, trying to get you enthusiastic about the day. I know you're trapped inside the house, hearing from more and more people who are listening to us on their smart speakers. All you got to do is say, hey, Alexa, or hey, Echo Dot, or whatever that thing is, and say, play Mason in Ireland, or play ESPN Los Angeles, and you will hear us through there, which is cool. I wanted to play this rant, John, by Michael Wilbon.
Let's hear it.
This is Michael Wilbon yesterday. He was asked about the new baseball plan, the idea that there would be one league in Florida and one league in Arizona, then the winner of Florida and Arizona would play in a World Series. Here was his response.
They're wasting my time. You're wasting my time. Why are we talking about plans? I mean, people are still dying in America and other places, too. People are still quarantined. People are still having to stay in place by a governor decree in many, if not, you know, all of the states where baseball teams operate, for usually where their home markets are. What are we talking about, Tony? I understand that baseball, like every sport, needs to sit and plan, because you can't be caught just like, oh, what are we doing if the world takes a turn for the better and sports are allowed to resume? But until then, I feel bothered by these. And I don't know if somebody's just leaking them. I don't know how they're getting out or why they're getting out. I understand people are sitting behind closed doors trying to figure out what the hell to do. But until the world takes a turn for the better, Tony, I don't care about their plan.
Tony, tone. There have to be reasons for optimism. We are all.
Wait a minute. You're yelling. Why are you yelling at Tony? That was Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry. Michael, we were trying to be optimistic. We are seeking out shreds of optimism. And these plans are giving people hope. It is possible to do multiple things at once. There's terrible stuff happening on the planet. But you're still allowed to have hope in the world. There's still an opportunity for us to think about, well, we might be able to do this, or we could be able to do that when all this clears. I don't understand. He's coming off like Bill Plachke on that little riff right there.
Yeah, I think he's premature. Anybody jump to any conclusions. This narrative, I know people hate that word, changes all the time. Next week, we could have different answers than we have now.
Keep floating his plans. Keep giving us plans.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with putting ideas out there. It just seems to me that Mike's rant is premature.
I agree.
That's what I would say.
I completely do. It's like, it's okay to float a plan. It's okay to test market something, to float a balloon, because frankly, a test balloon is about all we've got as sports fans to look forward to right now. It gives us something to think about. It gives us, captures our imagination. We wonder if it might work. We're starting to see the outlines of a recovery out there right now. So why not make some suggestions? I'm totally good with that. All right. John Tiger King is the phenomenon that has swept America during our quarantine. I don't know where any of us would be without Tiger King.
I'd be better off. I'd be smarter. I'd get 7 hours of my life back.
It gave us 7 hours of programming, John.
Eight for you.
Yeah, eight for me. So this was a little bit of business that somebody set up on NBA 2K. It is a matchup between Carol Baskin, who killed her husband and fed him to the tigers, and Joe Exotic, who paid somebody $3,000 to whack Carol Baskin. And here they are going at it in NBA 2K.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. Carol Baskin just got posterized by Joe Exotic.
Now, Carol is usually a killer on defense, but like her husband, she's disappeared tonight.
Jeff Lowe conned his way to a max contract, but can you blame him? Look at the drip. Oakley signed this man. He's already an Affliction brand ambassador.
Exotic, a little trickeration, puts Baskin through the meat grinder for the layup.
The lob to Shaq. Oh, my!
The chemistry between Shaq and Exotic Joe is undeniable. These big cat lovers are playing like dogs tonight.
The man has two husbands as he steps back for the three-pointer. Here, kitty, kitty, ISO Joe can do it all.
Ooh. ISO Joe.
What a dime from Doc Antle. Must be sardine oil on the court, because Joe and the Doc are feasting tonight.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, I still can't believe that this is what has captured the imagination of America. I think we're going to look back on this in 30 years and be completely embarrassed that we all got into Tiger King. It's going to be the 2020 Macarena. Remember when we all got into the Macarena?
Now, I think someday we will see Joe Exotic. Well, maybe not Joe Exotic, because he's in the slammer for 22 years. But
I get pardoned.
Someday we'll see Carol Baskin on Big Brother. Or we'll see Saf, the guy with one arm on Survivor.
No, these guys, 15 minutes of fame is up for all these people. They're going away quicker than quick.
They are, but where would we have been without them? Because there's not another thing. Is there another thing that everybody's watching? Is there? And by the way, when I say that, there is going to be something that everybody is watching starting on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. And
the Michael Jordan documentary.
Matter of fact, okay, so Ramona got leaked the entire series. She has all 10 parts, and she's been watching it. When we were texting with her yesterday, she had seen 8 of the 10 parts. And Ramona is coming up next to tell us, give us a preview of what's in it. But I've heard it is OJ Made in America good.
That is awesome.
And the OJ doc is probably the best documentary ESPN has ever produced. Won an Oscar for Best Picture. People say this is as good at that. You know, one thing I forgot about, Mace, and we can ask Momo about this because I know she's coming up next, but I forgot about the element that Jerry Krause, the general manager, despised by the team.
Yeah.
Phil couldn't stand him. Jordan couldn't stand him. Remember, Jordan would only called him Crumbs?
Yep.
Because he was kind of a fat guy who would like always have crumbs on his shirt.
And because Jerry thought it was all about him.
Well, he made the statement, players don't win championships, organizations do. And so every time Jordan saw him, he would say, hey, you think you can win one without me? You know, by the way, they haven't. The Bulls' last championship was the subject of this documentary, 1999. That was more than 20 years ago.
Yep.
And so there was this element of us against the world. That's why Phil called it the last dance. Phil used to always say, there's a difference between the team and the club.
Yes.
The team are the guys in the locker room. The club is everybody else. And it's one of the reasons why they didn't bring Phil back. You know, remember we all thought they were bringing Phil back, and at the last minute they hired Mike D'Antoni because of that dynamic. And so Phil used that as a motivator. He said, look, these guys, it was almost like that movie Major League where they put up a picture of the owner and they peeled off a portion of it every time they won a game. They used the owner and the hatred for the owner to motivate the players, and that's all part of this too.
Yeah. By the way, I put out a tweet yesterday. We had John Hamm on the show. Lindsay Fulton is doing a great job booking the show. What's the next big guest she should go after? So here are some ideas. John Cryer from Two and a Half Men. I would add to that Charlie Sheen, who's got a batting cage in his own backyard.
Yeah, so you don't have to go after you don't have to go after John Cryer.
Okay.
John Cryer was a big deal, wasn't he? I never watched Two and a Half Men, but I heard he was a big deal.
Yeah, we can.
Charlie Sheen's great. He's got a batting cage in his backyard.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen would be fun.
Jose Altuve. Oh.
Anybody from the Astros would be good.
Leonardo DiCaprio. Good luck.
Oh, yeah, right.
George Clooney. Good luck. Scottie Pippen is actually a great idea, given that The Last Dance is coming back on on Sunday.
I've reached out to pretty much anybody that will possibly be in that documentary, and the only one that I think as of right now that looks like we'll probably get is Reggie
Barack
Miller.
Obama.
Barack Obama. Did that one about a week and a half ago.
A lot of people suggested Barack Obama.
I mean, he's probably easier to get now than he was when he was a president, but I did reach out. I haven't heard back yet, so I'll follow up.
Good. And no Pippen, you don't think?
I just haven't heard back yet. I only sent that one like on Friday, so it's still a possibility.
Pippen plays golf at Mountain Gate, but of course no one's at Mountain Gate now, so
that's
I can't go after him.
That's true. Yeah, he'd be great with the somebody from the documentary when we watch it on Sunday night. There will be an idea that occurs from us out of that. But put Charlie Sheen on the list. That's a good idea. I met Charlie over
Leaning.
In L.A. He's actually a really good guy.
He's on the list
weirdly.
Already.
Yeah, weirdly. He's a really good guy. All right, coming up next for you.
Put that in quotes. Charlie Sheen is a really good guy. Steve Mason.
I mean, he seemed like a really good guy. I don't know. He was friendly.
No comment.
I'm going to tweet this out. That was excellent.
Was friendly. All right, Momo's coming up next. She's seen, I think by now, the entire Last Dance documentary about Michael Jordan. We've got that coming up next for you. Momo's going to hang out for a while. Top of the hour, Bob Bradley, the head coach for LAFC, the Black and Gold, is going to be with us. Mason Ireland, 710 ESPN. Yeah, we are getting through this thing. Thanks a lot for listening. Hopefully we are giving your life a little structure, a little normalcy, and hopefully we're giving Momo's life a little structure and a little normalcy. She joins us now. Momo, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys? Well, I don't even know if it's structure. It just meant I couldn't take my afternoon nap. This is my nap time usually. So when the baby's down for a nap, you gotta get your nap in, right?
Yeah, but Ramon, I mean, come on, you've been quarantined for a month. You could really take a nap at any time of the day, couldn't you?
You're right. You're right. You know, the thing is, I do kind of have a good structure. I actually think that's important for us right now as we get through this. Like, everybody's, if you have like your times when you tend to be, this is when I'm going to get work done, and this is when I'm going to work out, and this is when I'm going to, you know, like, I actually think that that really helps you as you go through this. Because if you just have every day and wake up and go, okay, what am I going to do today? That's not a good plan.
All right. Now, Ramon, I'm very jealous because you have seen the majority of The Last Dance. The Last Dance debuts on ESPN on Sunday night, Sunday night. And, Ramon, have you seen the whole thing? When you texted us yesterday, you were through eight of them. Is that where you are now?
I was through six when I texted you yesterday, and then I watched episodes 7 and 8 last night. I only have the first 8 because I think they're still cutting the last 2.
Okay.
Right? So what they gave us for review, I have watched all of what they gave us for review. And it is, you guys, I am so excited for everyone to get to watch this. This is awesome. It's so good.
Why? I mean, like, the OJ one was awesome because it had all these historic references and you understood the history of LA. Like, is it, explain why you like it so much.
Yeah. Okay. So I think a lot of this, and what's got me interested and enough to where I'm going to write probably 3 or 4 stories on this. Okay. Been working this week on how this documentary came into being. And, you know, I heard about this maybe 5 or 6 years ago from one of our executives at ESPN that, that there was like 500 hours of unseen footage from Michael Jordan's last year with the Bulls that NBA Entertainment had shot and Jordan controlled the rights to. And it was kind of like this holy grail of archival footage that people knew was out there, but no one had ever made into a documentary before. And like, somebody someday would, right? But Michael had to get on board with this, or Michael had to be ready to do this. And I think that's why this is exciting, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there that's, you know, just really behind the scenes with the Bulls. But for Michael Jordan to get on board with doing this, for him to say green light, okay, I'm in, that's really interesting. And I was talking to the director of it today. His name is Jason Hayhier. I can't pronounce his name very well. It's Hehir, right? And he's going to be doing a lot of interviews. I'll try to get him on your Culture Pop podcast, Mace. I think he's really interesting. I just kind of said, what do you think got Michael to say yes now? Like, what is it? And why did he say no for all these years? For 23 years, this footage just sat out there, you know, and he wasn't ready to do it. And he said, you know, I think for Michael, he never wanted to do anything that was purporting to be the definitive Jordan documentary, or the, you know, he didn't even really want to be around when they did it. He wasn't excited about the Hall of Fame stuff, because the reason being is that when they do the definitive documentary on you, it's like your life is over. It's like they just, okay, we've written your life story and that's it. And like, where do you go from there? And Michael doesn't see it that way. Like, he's 56. He's still got a lot of life to live. And a lot of this is just, you know, a lot of what he's been dealing with probably since, you know, the last 5, 10 years, I guess, is this idea that he's the old guy now. He's not the most physically dominant athletic guy who can just beat anyone, the most competitive guy. And like, you really get a great look at that in the series. Like, there's a lot in there. And I'll tell you, like, I was wondering how much they would get into things like his quotes on Harvey Gantt, right? The Republicans buy Nikes too. Quote.
That's right.
What's interesting about that, Ramona, is for a long time that was said that he said that, and then a lot of people said, no, it's an urban legend. He never said it. He admits in this documentary that he said it.
Yeah, he kind of gives the context of how that quote came to be.
Well, we should explain what it is too. So at one point there was an election in North Carolina. And was it, I'm trying to remember, was it Jesse Helms they were trying to unseat?
Yeah, Jesse Helms was the Republican and Harvey Gantt was the Democrat.
And so they went to Michael Jordan, who obviously graduated from the University of Carolina. I don't know if he ever graduated, but he went there.
Yeah.
And they asked Michael, hey, will you do an endorsement for Gantt so we can get rid of this guy, Jesse Helms, who's been in office forever? And Jordan said, no. And they said, why not? You gotta help us. He said, because Republicans buy shoes, too. So he admits in this documentary that he said it.
Yeah, it's a little different than the quote is a little different than what's been reported all these years. He gives the context. I don't know if I want to give it away. Do you guys want me to give it away what he says?
No, please don't.
I think it's in episode 5, so I don't want to say.
Okay,
but he does address it. And I've never heard him talk about it the way he talks about it in this. Okay, there is stuff about Phil Jackson and the way that he coached that team that was just. Wow. I mean, like looking back on it, the one thing I took away from just watching this in its entirety over the last couple of days is, I mean, when I listen to Michael, when I watch Michael, when I hear Michael, I just hear Kobe. Like, oh my gosh. Like,
and Kobe's in this, right?
He's in this episode 5 and it's all Michael and Kobe. Not all, but a lot of it's Michael and Kobe. It's just amazing. Like, I knew how much Kobe sounded like Michael, walked like Michael, played like Michael. But when you see it, like real close up like that and you hear it, it's uncanny how much he sounds and acts and looks just like him. And also, I'll be honest, like, I really liked seeing Phil Jackson again, guys. Like, apparently, you know, the director told me he did about a 4.5-hour interview with Phil. And it was at his cabin in Montana. And Phil is just awesome in this, you know. And it's
well,
just,
when
I've,
Phil
I've
opens
him.
Up, there's nothing like it. I've had the chance to have dinner with Phil in big groups a couple of times. And you get him going on stuff. Oh. Like one night, he just gave us an education on Bob Dylan.
Cool.
And how, Bob, you know, Phil was raised by two ministers. I don't know if they cover this story, Ramona. You can tell me if it's come up yet. Do they talk about the Tony Kukoc fracture when Jordan went away? And they called up, so it was one of those years Jordan was playing baseball. So
95, yeah.
All right, been, so
94 or 95, I can't remember.
The Bulls are in the playoffs, and they're down by one or two.
Yep.
And Phil draws up a play in the huddle.
Yep.
At the end of the game. They've got the last shot. And Phil says, okay, guys, everybody over there thinks that we're going to give the ball to Scotty. So, Scotty, we're going to use you as a decoy, and we're going to give the ball to Tony Kukoc. And Pippen is so upset by this that he refuses to go in the game.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I waited behind Michael all these years, and now you're not going to give me the ball? You know, blank you, I'm not going in. Phil goes, okay. And he grabs some guy off the bench and goes, you go in. And they run the play, and Kukoc hits the game winner. And they win the game, and they all go back in the locker room. And it was Phil walked into the locker room, and at least this is a story he told us. He said that he walked in and he said, this team is now fractured. You are broken. And you are the only people who can fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Cartwright, who was like an elder statesman on that team, was in tears. And he walked up to Pippen and went, how could you do that?
Yeah.
How could you do that to us after everything? And they somehow got over it. But it was Scottie's legacy for a good probably for 2 or 3 years after that. Pippen got asked about it all the time.
And you know, they cover that play and that situation extensively as well. There was another one also with Scott. That series was against the Knicks. Remember that? It was against
Steve Kerr says to this day that he goes, I hate that is what people think about when they think of Scottie, because he was a great teammate to us and he was our best player when Michael left.
Yeah, I mean, they do a really good job of talking about Michael's, you know, kind of hiatus. Like, you know, I think when I see it,
they do a good job of talking about his time away playing baseball.
Yeah, and
do they bring up the gambling theory?
They bring up the gambling theory. They bring up his father's death. They bring up everything. And like, I talked to the director this morning. I'm doing this story on it. Like he said, you know, when he first said, you know, signed on to do this, it was like, okay, should I do this? Is he really going to talk about all this stuff? Are you going to do that? And he was a little nervous, like, you know, I don't know him yet, you know. And he said the first interview they did, 15 minutes in, he's talking about Harvey Gantt, and you know, like it was like he was like, oh, okay, Michael came to play. And
why do you think Michael was willing to open up now?
Yeah, and I think that's the fundamental question, right? Like, I think some of it just is him getting used to life as a 56-year-old man, okay? I think he's sort of like, he passed 50 and he was still in that Wright Thompson story talking about, you know, I can
Yeah, there are 20-year-olds who never saw him play.
Yeah.
Think you about know, that.
And he was still kind of talking about, like, I can still play, I can still play. I think, like, he sort of let go of that and kind of moved into the next phase. Like, you know, his daughter apparently said, you know, in one of the interviews that they did, like, when she was having her child, right, she said, what do you want them to call you? You know, do you want to be grandpa, granddad? And he thought about it for a minute, and he goes, just tell them to call me Michael. Like, he couldn't see himself as a grandfather, you know, like grandpa, right? Like, he's never been able to wrap his mind around being the old guy, and he doesn't want that his story to be over or be told in a definitive fashion. And this isn't, honestly, this isn't a definitive Jordan doc. It isn't. It's a lot about the team. It's like, if you think about it as...
Well, that's how the OJ doc was. OJ doc was not all about OJ.
Right. It put the whole thing into a historical context, which I think
and
is one of the powers.
Guys.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you guys this. Michael Thompson's younger brother, Andy, is a producer for NBA TV. He's been there for more than 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the guys who shot this thing. He was in the locker room getting a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
They allowed cameras in the last year. And Andy is not prone to hyperbole at all. And I had dinner with Andy and Michael this past year. And he says that this is, and think about it, he's been there 20 years. He's seen everything the NBA has ever shot. He said there's nothing like this in NBA history.
Yeah.
He said that this is the definitive, basic, behind-the-scenes look at a championship team that has never been seen before. And he could not stop talking about it.
It was actually Andy's idea. I talked to him yesterday for this story. Andy was the guy who pitched it, okay? He said he'd always wanted to make a documentary, and he'd gotten close to the Bulls. That, you know, back at the time, the NBA used to do all those home videos, you know, like, come fly with me, and, you know, like, that.
Right.
He used to shoot the Bulls for... And Jordan, so he had a relationship, and you know he was a former player himself. Like he played in the Philippines, I think, and you know played in college at the University of Minnesota, along with the same Michael's alma mater, right? He said, you know, he just thought they kind of had this idea that Jordan was going to retire and the Bulls were going to break up. Like, I mean, Jerry Krause famously said this is going to be Phil's last year, and then Phil, and then Michael says I'm not going to play for any other coach but Phil. So Pippen was not under contract. Dennis Rodman wasn't under contract. Like everybody kind of went into that 97, 98 year knowing this is the last dance. And so Andy Thompson goes and pitches his boss, a guy named Greg Winnick at NBA Entertainment. And then they have a meeting with Adam Silver, who as the head of NBA Entertainment at the time. And this guy says, and Andy makes the pitch. Adam says, I love it. I'm on board. Let me see if I can get the Bulls to agree with it, to agree to the access. So Adam Silver meets with, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf and Phil and Michael. And then, you know, the deal they all worked out is we're going to shoot this and it's just for the archives. And, you know, maybe someday we'll do something with it, but we all have to be on board. But can you imagine shooting something, John, that like you think is like the greatest thing you've ever shot and done? And then it not seeing the light of day for 23 years.
Ramona, there's another one out there. Another one out there. Yeah, I'll tell you what. We got a break, but I'll tell you what it is when we come back. Yeah, there's another one out there, but I don't know if it'll be as good as this. This sounds like it's spectacular.
And by the way, it premieres on Sunday. It'll be on, the first episode will be on 6 o'clock Pacific, and the second episode will be on 7 o'clock Pacific, and then both of them will repeat. So that's coming up this Sunday, and we'll be all over it for you on Monday. Excited about it. Momo's hanging out with us, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.